Is there a theory about what this is?
Of course there are theories.
You don't have to tell me what it is yet, but...
Each is more useless than the last.
Hello, welcome to Guide to the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
And this week we are taking a look at the cryptids and monsters of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm, yes.
One of the scariest states in the 50.
Definitely one of the oldest.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? I feel like if there's any state or, you know, any region of the country that has a shot at having a ton of paranormal activity or just rich, weird folklore, might be Massachusetts.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a reputation because of Salem.
Oh, obviously. Yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're not necessarily touching on that today, but it's certainly a thing.
Yeah, I've been dying for Salem, too. I wonder where, I keep forgetting that, but I'm always like...
I know.
I'm interested.
I've heard that going to Salem in the spring is, like, one of the best times to go.
I've heard that, too, especially because I think...
springtime.
You know, I love the fall, and obviously people would want to go to Salem, Massachusetts, like the site of the witch trials around Halloween.
Yeah.
But it gets pretty crazy out there, evidently, or like... it sounds to me like probably any time is fun to go, but in the spring it feels like you might have a little more freedom.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So I am going to be talking about puckwudgies today, William.
Puckwudgies.
What will you be talking about?
Oh my God.
Do you know about puckwudgies?
Puckwudgies. I think the only reason that I've ever heard that word is because of Harry Potter.
Okay.
Aren't puckwudgies, like, doesn't Hagrid have those?
Oh, okay, so I do touch on that.
Okay.
I only found that puckwudgies were part of, like, the larger wizarding world thing. Like, she wrote about them in Pottermore and stuff.
Oh, okay, maybe that's why.
I must be wrong.
I don't know, man. I was into all that stuff back in the day, so...
Oh, so was
I. It's not impossible that I know it from the extended lore.
Yeah.
There definitely wasn't a puckwudgie main character, I don't think. I've fallen away from the world of Harry Potter, I have to admit.
As have I.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be talking to you about a creature called the Dover Demon.
Great. Yeah, this is something I know by name, but I know, like, nothing about.
Yeah, it's something that I guess has sort of, like, a reputation or is just an interesting kind of modern-day cryptid.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, you know how it goes. We'll get into it.
We'll find out. So let's learn a little bit more about these guys after this commercial break. All right, Will, why don't I take you on a puckwudgie journey?
Oh, I've been dying to go on a puckwudgie journey.
I know, it's frankly about time.
Yeah.
So I realized that we have talked about, not puckwudgies in particular, but Massachusetts in a smaller way. Well, we talked about it a couple of times, actually. You and I have been to Massachusetts a ton because our grandparents lived there for a good part of our childhood. So we went to the Berkshires area like a buttload as kids. And we did an episode about weird Berkshire stuff at one point, which I forgot until I was talking about this right now.
Yeah, it was like early on, I think.
It was. But even earlier on, which is what I was thinking of, I covered the Bridgewater Triangle.
That's right.
In episode 33, which was in 2018. Wow. So puckwudgies are kind of part of the Bridgewater Triangle thing, but I didn't talk about them whatsoever. I sort of clicked through and checked out what it was about. And I mostly talked about UFO sightings on the Bridgewater Triangle, like the Bermuda Triangle or other kinds of I was on a stretch where I really loved a triangle.
All kinds of triangles.
For a while. I was covering all sorts.
It's a powerful geometric shape.
One of the most powerful. it's an area where weird things happen. And for the Bridgewater Triangle, at least in that episode, I covered mostly UFOs and like general weirdness as opposed to specific monsters that were like indigenous to the area.
Yeah.
So this puckwudgie thing will be new to Guides to the Unknown. But I had heard of puckwudgies from the excellent audio drama Bridgewater.
Oh, yeah.
That came out in the last few years. It has two seasons. It appears to be donezo, but I love it.
Oh, really?
I listened to each season multiple times. I really love it. It's worth a listen, I think. So, puckwudgies. This turned out, this research and everything, differently than I expected it to. Not that I knew everything about puckwudgies. Honestly, I just remembered the name. I was like, oh yeah, puckwudgies. It's like a weird thing.
Yeah, that's why you said it to me, and it's such an odd sounding word that it sticks in your memory, but
Right.
Aside from literally having heard those syllables before.
Yeah.
Got nothing.
Strung together. Yeah. But it turns out that, like, the popular lore might not be entirely right.
Okay.
But people do have accounts of seeing something that they categorize as a Pukwudgie, whether that is kind of like adhering to what they were originally sort of meant to be or not. And I think it's interesting to sort of like explore both.
Yeah.
So here is a glancing overview of what most people might know about Pukwudgies or think of them as. So they're said to be little, like, kind of cryptid-esque, maybe sort of like troll-like creatures. They're sometimes categorized as being fairies or fae, living in forests in Massachusetts. They're particularly connected to the Freetown State Forest in Massachusetts.
Okay.
They're definitely spoken about in connection with that forest in the podcast Bridgewater. And in other eastern states, they're not just a Massachusetts thing. They're like all over the place, but definitely particularly Massachusetts seems to be like their main stomping ground.
Okay.
Their name comes from the Native Americans of the Wampanoag tribe who first encountered them. And the name roughly translates to little man of the woods that vanishes.
Oh.
Which is an awesome name.
Wow. Yeah, I guess, you know, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think because in my head I tied this directly to Harry Potter, I was picturing, like, I don't know, like a little fuzzy ball. You know what I mean? Oh, like, you know how, like, Harry Potter creatures?
Yes.
Like the magical creatures, the Fantastic Beasts or whatever?
Yeah, like Hagrid would be keeping them in a basket or something.
Yes, there would be like a pile of Pukwudgies.
Yeah, yeah.
A little man. What was it? Can you read the?
Yeah, little man of the woods that vanishes.
Yeah, so that straight up sounds like an elf or a troll or something. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, they're way more like a troll or something. They're kind of like humanoid.
Yeah.
It seems like. But they also have a lot of features that aren't very
human-ish. I think I went to school with a Pukwudgie.
I think I dated a couple Pukwudgies.
Disappeared on me.
It's so stupid.
My dad was a Pukwudgie. Went out for cigarettes and never came back.
Oh. Well, that's my dad too, I guess. So very sad.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Very
sad. So I forgot you were my sister. Yeah. No idea who you were for a moment.
So these little guys are looking to cause mischief, big trickster energy.
Yeah.
Or worse, be violent for fun. So, like, at best, gonna just like mess with you. At worst, they're gonna F you up.
Oh, God.
So, description wise, they're said to be 2 to 3 feet tall, have gray skin. They might have long black hair in some descriptions, or they might have like black spikes or kind of like porcupine quills.
There's a lot of variation here.
It's mostly gray. And this is, again, in the more popularized, like, modern version of a Pukwudgie. Pukwudgie, gray skin, and then black hair or spikes.
It sounds like you're describing Lucille, too, from Arrested Development, instead of a brownish area
with spikes.
With points.
Yeah.
The grayish area with points, Pukwudgie.
We shall be so lucky
and those points,
to have Lucille, too.
I know.
Peeking around trees at us.
I'm getting dizzy. And either those
dizzy.
That spiky hair is just hair, or it's porcupine quills. Good God.
I know.
I hope to never run afoul of a porcupine.
Oh, God. Have you ever seen a porcupine in real life?
Never in real life, no.
Me
but
neither.
I've seen, you know, I've been on the internet before, so I've unfortunately, you know, scrolled through and seen somebody like, my dog ran into a porcupine. And then they, like, just post the most frightening image you've ever seen in your life.
But I think I've been more on the softer side of porcupine internet, because I've seen people with porcupines as pets.
Oh, yeah, like a baby porcupine.
Yeah, that's, like, in a bathtub, and they're, like, scrubbing it with a toothbrush as, like, a back brush.
Yes, I think that's not the norm.
No, I think
most porcupines are waiting to just, like, looking kind of cute, but secretly they're going to destroy. You're going to be speared with 1,000 quills that you have to pull out one by one.
And those quills look thick.
Oh, my God.
That would hurt so bad. That, like, imagine
suck.
When you're in the woods and you get, like, those burrs on you.
Yeah.
That, but, like, so much thicker.
Yes. Is there any chance, now that we're talking about literal porcupines?
Yeah.
Is there any chance that people saw a porcupine and they thought it was a little man?
I have a question later about what, so actually in just a minute, about what somebody saw.
Yeah.
I have a question about whether somebody just saw a straight up wolf.
Okay.
And not a Pukwudgie.
Yeah.
It's coming right up. So
maybe somebody was trying to say porcupine and they forgot the word.
Pukwudgie.
Pukwudgie. Pukwudgie. What?
Pukwudgie.
Yeah. They just got all confused.
It could be.
It was a huge misunderstanding. Yeah. I was trying to say porcupine, but my face was full of quills.
I swelled up so.
Porcupine. Oh, I don't know.
Must be a Pukwudgie. I think that's what they said.
In fact, write it down.
Sounds like a mythical creature to me. So they might be doing something like peeking at you from behind a tree while you're walking your dog, and then follow you home and stare at you through your windows to freak you out.
No, thanks.
That's an actual simplification of a story from a book called Dark Woods. Another story from the same book, which I found out about from newenglandfolklore.blogspot.com. Okay. You can find all these sources in our show notes. I used this for our episode that was about, God, what was about it? Whatever the, what was it about? The episode where I talked about somebody who had like a, oh, it was our Urban Legends episode. And I talked about somebody who had a boot shaped mark on their grave or whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was in the seas or something. But it's a great blog. So anyway, this story is about a guy named Tom who snuck out of the house as a teen for a walk in the woods. Scary to me.
You love going for a walk
in the
woods.
At night, though? Snuck out of the house in the middle of the night for a walk in the woods?
Maybe not at night.
That's what I'm saying. That's too much. He saw... So this is a crazy story because it's like a combination of different phenomena to me.
Okay.
He saw a ball of light in the woods that he said swelled like in and out, like it was breathing. And so he followed that until it disappeared. And now he's just like in the middle of the woods down a trail and was like, oh, okay. So then he turned around to go back home when he saw a short fur-covered man standing nearby. He was about 2 feet tall with a nose like a wolf. He let out an unearthly moan and then ran off into the woods. And I said, okay, was this just a wolf?
Could have just been a wolf.
Right.
I mean, I guess when you describe it as like a man.
Yeah, I know. But like, two feet tall, nose like a wolf, lets out an unearthly moan. And it's like in the middle of the night in the woods.
Yeah.
And like covered in, it's covered in fur. It has a nose like a wolf and it makes a sound like a wolf.
Might just be a wolf. I agree with you. You know those Halloween costumes where it's like, they put a dog, it's like, you know, like they have like a, let's say it's a troll costume.
Yeah.
So the dog puts its head through the costume and then the troll's legs are its front legs.
Yeah.
That's because when you look at the front of a dog, if it were dark and all you were seeing was a silhouette and it was standing just right, you would just see a head, body, and legs.
Right. Yeah. It really just needs a little arm sticking out to the sides.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Give you a humanish impression.
Sure. But who's to say that this isn't a little human creature with its arms folded or something? What I'm saying is...
peacefully folded in and then making an unearthly moan.
Then runs away.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is you could, in a low light, high stress situation, I can imagine turning, seeing an animal for a fraction of a second and being like, what was that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was just following an orb of light that was breathing.
That's the weirder part.
I know.
Why isn't the story about that orb of light that's breathing?
I don't know. I mean, you know what? Maybe. So I think that Dark Woods, the book that this story is from, maybe it's about Pukwudgies in particular or something. It could be just about stories from the woods. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But for the sake of argument, let's say that it's about Pukwudgies.
Sure.
Maybe because it's a book about Pukwudgies, they focus on this. If it was a book about orbs of light, that would be the main focus.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
You know? But then this dude saw one a second time as well. So one night he decided to just drive out to the parking lot of Freetown State Forest and just kind of like vibe in solitude with his car off, just kind of like looking into the woods, when all of a sudden he realized that he saw the same little man with his eyes glowing red.
Oh.
And while he's looking, being like, oh my God, that's what I saw before, all of a sudden the car engine and the radio of the car pop on. Tom freaks out, and he drives the hell home.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's very weird. I don't know what's going on there.
Again, it makes me think of Harry Potter. I have to say.
You're right.
I think it's in the second book, mm-hmm. in Chamber of Secrets. So they go into the woods and they are following these spiders, and then this car that they've been interacting with sort of comes to life and drives them out of there.
Yeah.
Like that's another weird story where it's like, what's going on around the Puckwudgie in this story? Because
right.
now you've got a car acting of its own accord, mm-hmm. plus that breathing ball of light thing. Does the Puckwudgie influence its environment?
Yeah, and also, I'm going to go into it in more detail in just a moment, but so a lot of the stories that people tell about Puckwudgies are usually them, it's just like one, they see one Puckwudgie by itself doing something weird. But the story, like the original stories of the Puckwudgie that the Wampanoag tribe originally told, were always Puckwudgies in groups. Okay. Like it was never just about like one individually. So I wonder if maybe like people are spotting one, but maybe others are sort of around or something. And maybe there's a collective influence happening that gets things like the car popping
sure,
on.
Right.
I don't know. Interesting.
That's interesting. It's almost like raptors in Jurassic Park, where it's like one draws your attention so the other one can sneak up.
Yeah, because also there's kind of like a head boss Puckwudgie. Mm. And so maybe the head boss kind of comes out and like freaks out the person, but the other Puckwudgies can influence them because also the Puckwudgies all have magical powers.
Right.
So, interesting.
It's like, yeah.
Maybe they're all doing something collectively that can influence things like create that ball of light.
Yeah.
Make the car do stuff.
The ball of light still seems especially weird to me. But
it's
like,
very weird.
When you get to the car, it makes me think of also like Gremlins, where one of the mm-hmm, original ideas of the actual folklore behind Gremlins was that they'll mess with your engine.
Yes.
Mechanics.
Yes. If I didn't write it, I know I thought about Gremlins at some point during this.
It also made me think about like one of those things that they tell you about going to any big city,
mm-hmm.
which is like somebody might like try to razzle dazzle you while their, you know, cohort sneaks up behind you and steals your wallet.
Yeah, totally.
Right. It's like one person distracts and the other one is really what you need to be paying attention to.
Yeah, there's a little team. Although it doesn't seem like the Puckwudgies really have an agenda beyond just like freak this person out. Like
True.
They just enjoy mischief making.
Although you did say that sometimes they like to cause mischief and sometimes they like to get violent for fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess their agenda is harm.
Sick little
of different degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. So people have embraced the idea of this, like kind of in a jokey way.
Sure.
So the same way that they'll be like, you know, there's like a place in Missouri, which is kind of famous for the Momo monster, and they have like the Momo burger and stuff.
Right.
There's a sign that says Puckwudgie Crossing outside of Freetown Forest. And it's become like a whole thing. Now, this is where it got really interesting and surprising to me. I really thought that I was just going to kind of find like we've done in the past, and I think is really awesome as well. I thought I was just going to kind of find different stories of people encountering Puckwudgies
right.
and just be like fun and weird and whatever. But I found the website of this author named Andrew Warburton. The website is fairiesofnewengland.com. And this is somebody who has a book called Fairies of New England, The Little People of the Hills and Forests, which is coming out sometime soon. There isn't a date for
it
yet.
Okay.
And he has really interesting research about Puckwudgies on his site, where he went like, he kind of took another angle and went really deep. And something that I thought was interesting is that Warburton himself is actually from England, but traveled here to New England to research his book. And I think of England as being like a particularly like fairy dense place.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like I think of England and Ireland as being that kind of way. And so for him to come here to research it, I felt strangely flattered.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
And proud that he came to New England. Like, oh, yeah, we got some fae folk here, too.
Yeah, it is funny. We've talked a lot about like urban legends mm-hmm. on the show, obviously.
Yeah.
And one of the big determining factors of urban legends was like drawing a hard line between stories of fairies and trolls
mm-hmm.
and telling stories around like, you know, don't go to Lover's Lane. The hook hand guy will get you or whatever. It's like technology.
Yeah, like morality tales.
And I that's what I also think of England as being, is like, mm-hmm. I guess that older folklore where it's like a fairy ring or whatever.
Right.
You know, a ring of mushrooms, and that's where fairies were or whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's interesting, though, that, like, you know, people came over from England onto this continent.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe some of these creatures did, too. Like, we transplanted some fairy. I'm sure there must be fairy stories or whatever in, like, California, right? But, like,
there must be.
It does seem like a...
Yeah.
It does seem like an East Coasty old states, like the 13 original colonies kind of notion.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I mean,
I'm talking out of my ass. I don't know.
No, I am too. But I mean, that does make total sense. And even if it wasn't that, like, that it's the idea that, like, oh, they came over, maybe some fairies hitched a ride. At the very least, it's like, well, their stories came over.
Yeah, the people, came over from England, believe some of them probably believing in or just telling stories of these kinds of things. So, of course, when they came over here, they told the same kinds of stories, just now centered in, say, Massachusetts.
Totally. And then I was also thinking that part of my thinking that like England and Ireland, or England in particular, is like a very fairy centric place is the story of the Cottingley fairies. Those girls who like faked those pictures of fairies in the garden. I love that story.
Yeah,
that's where the Goog, if you don't know what I'm talking about, we did an episode about that. I'm not sure which one it is. You can probably, you know what I do? I do this regularly. I think I did it to find what episode we covered the Bridgewater Triangle in. I put Guide to the Unknown in quotes, Cottingley fairies in Google.
Yep.
And then I figured out that way.
There's also technically a search function on our website.
It's just when episodes are too old, though.
Oh, really?
I knew that the Bridgewater Triangle was a really old one, so it wouldn't work for that. And I think the Cottingley fairies is also super old.
Oh, okay.
I think that it's like maybe episodes like 100 and later on our site work.
Oh, interesting.
Something like that.
All right, I'll have to look into that.
Because we didn't start documenting them that way.
Yes, yes.
Anything that I know is newer, I use our site for, though.
Yeah, my dream, just to break the fourth, my dream is to make our website more of like a repository of like different kinds of things. If you want to just hear about like fairies, I want to have a page all about fairies and all the shows we did about these kinds of things, urban legends, pop culture, like Scream, Blair Witch, whatever. I want to have those broken out by like topic on our site.
I know, that would be
but
cool.
This is just another nudge that I should do that as time allows.
I was about to say, it's just it's a time intensive process,
and I've got
and
oodles
not
of time.
Ideally, that it's not really that important.
It's important to me, damn it. We have a body of work.
I mean, it's cool,
I know,
but
I like
you know,
it. I
well, the body
like
of work still exists without doing that.
No, I'm going to destroy it.
Okay, so here is where it gets interesting to me. So he is who showed me that the description that I just gave, everything that I just said about Pukwudgies, differs pretty wildly from the original description of the Massachusetts Pukwudgies in particular. Because like I said, they are known to be in different regions and the description can vary, I think, pretty slightly. It's not like super different. It'll be like, oh, they live in marshes instead of like forests or something. It varies pretty wildly from the original description. And he has a theory as to why, with a few different points. So he points out that in the earliest stories from the Wampanoag people, the Pukwudgies are never referred to as anything but little people or pygmy people. They're never talked about as being creatures or trolls at all. And he says they were described as being magical and warlike. And like I said before, that they divided themselves into groups that each contained like a conventional leader and then even a an even more powerful leader above that person who was known as a great magician. So like there's the person who's going to like lead everything.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking that that means there's even like maybe they don't do stuff all the time. But it's like if we really need to go to them, the great magician is who we'll go to, but we don't want to like overtap their resources.
Like on The Office, Michael Scott was the boss, but sometimes they had to go to David Wallace.
Yes, I think that's right.
Who was extra in charge?
I think from corporate. That's right, because just the way that it was worded, like I think that's the way it is.
Now, did you say they were a warlike people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Meaning that they engaged in battle and combat?
I don't know. Literal battle and combat, but I think that that is kind of speaking to the like what we have called a mischievous nature and stuff.
Yeah,
they were like poking at you and poking at you. Just like your hunger would do midday.
Yeah, according to...
Paula Poundstone.
Paula Poundstone, that's right. God damn. Why do I know that stand-up so well? Poking at you, poking at you.
That's when you get a Snickers.
Yeah, that's so weird.
I know. Okay. So he points out that the way that Pukwudgies were said to structure themselves kind of mirrors the Wampanoag people themselves, which points to their humanness as opposed to their like troll or creatureness.
Right.
Then another difference between the description of modern Pukwudgies and these originals is that they were almost always described, again, I talked about this already, but they were almost always described as being seen in these groups back in the day. And modern stories, usually it's a lone Pukwudgie making mischief. But make no mistake, these past Pukwudgies were making mischief too. On that, it seems everybody can agree.
Yeah, they're always causing trouble.
But it's just in groups, it seems like traditionally... Today, yeah. Perhaps alone.
Right.
But as we both posited, talking out of our asses,
sure.
There are some secret people back there. Pukwudgie people. So throughout my research, both on Warburton's site and just like wherever else, I came across the story of Pukwudgies attacking Wampanoag deity Moshup, who had this, the powerful magic that the Pukwudgies had made them a legit threat to Moshup, even though he was like a god and like a very, he wasn't like a warlike god or anything. He was just like a very like father-like and loving presence to the Wampanoag people. But even Moshup was like, God, these Pukwudgies really have it. Like, they're really messing with me.
Hey, listen, if he was really peaceful and fatherly, listen, enough kids pile up on dad, pop.
Yeah,
rip
true.
Rip your dad to shreds, sure.
A powerful pop, but a pop all the same. Yeah. However, so like they messed with him enough that he was like, okay, enough. And he exiled them. But then they found their way back.
Sons of bitches.
These Pukwudgies. You just can't get rid of them.
They sound like a pain in the ass. Now, as you describe them, they sound like minions or like the mini Stay Puffs.
I was thinking their littleness probably benefits them.
Yeah.
Because they can just like sneak back in.
Yeah. It sucks.
It sucks.
It's like a rodent infestation.
Yes. It is like that.
Yeah.
So Warburton finds sources that suggest that that Pukwudgies may have been in these stories kind of stand-ins for the white people who were threatening the Wampanoag way of life, the colonizers who were coming in, and that Moshup was sort of representing the Wampanoag people and their way of life. So they're, you know, the Wampanoag people are trying to like just live and do their thing, and then the Pukwudgies are coming in, bugging them, being like, I'm attacking you. I'm making me do my thing or whatever. And they're like, get the hell away from me. It works for a minute, but then they come back in and you know, infest or whatever.
Yes.
And since a lot of folklore does turn out to be metaphor, that absolutely could be.
We are the Pukwudgies.
We are
because
Pukwudgies.
We came over from England and destroyed everyone living here.
Exactly.
The Pukwudgies won in the end.
I know.
So then let me ask you. What the hell is that thing peeking at that guy behind the tree when his car starts? Because if we're the Pukwudgies, what was that?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm really just asking this question in a different way. So where did these more modern ideas of Pukwudgies as solitary troll-like creatures come from? So as we said, Pukwudgies are featured in J.K. Rowling's Pottermore, if not in the actual books.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And in the Wizarding World with, and I linked it. There's like a wiki that had a ton of info that I was surprised to see. I thought, you know, when you go to like a wiki and there's just like a 3-sentence paragraph, I thought it was going to be like that. And I was like, oh my God, there's like a ton of stuff here.
Too much stuff.
Way too much stuff. Yeah. I didn't even really read it. I thought there was going to be like a bloop of a paragraph.
Yep.
And it's worth noting that she has been highly criticized for her bastardization of Native American concepts, among other things. Doy.
Oh, why? What's going on with JK?
Oh, nothing.
What did I miss? Want to get into it?
Blows. So proceed with caution on that link, but I include it in case you're interested.
Yeah.
And also, there was a book published in 1982 called The Good Giants and the Bad Pukwudgies by Jean Fritz, which depicts Pukwudgies in the way that we like kind of know them today traditionally. Not traditionally, the way that like we talk about them now or whatever. And it has been criticized by tribal members as being like, that's what are you talking about? That's not like what Pukwudgies are or whatever.
Yeah.
So to wrap up the real original indigenous perspective on Pukwudgies, Warburton spoke to a Wampanoag tour guide at the Aquinna Cultural Center on Martha's Vineyard, which is in Massachusetts, and asked them, like, what do you think about Pukwudgies? And they didn't really know about Pukwudgies. They were like, I don't know, it's like not really a thing.
We don't care.
Yeah, basically that, but said that Moshup was like super important to their culture. So it seemed like Pukwudgies are just kind of like a strange like footnote to people who kind of, I don't know, brought them to the popular culture. And that has completely moved away from its origin story and become its own thing.
That's interesting. I mean, that also makes sense. That's how a lot of these things happen.
Totally.
Right? Like the story changes the more you tell it, and it changes to fit the times.
Yeah.
What's
but
weirdest,
what are these things?
I know. Well, what's weirdest to me is the notion that, like, metaphorically, Pukwudgies might have been the colonizers who came over here and just, like, swarmed. Just, like, all of these strangers just pulled up in boats and then just took over the land and everything.
Yes.
But now that we have, for a couple hundred years now, taken over this region by and large, now we go, oh, but yeah, Pukwudgies are scary to us, too. They're, like, weird old folklore that's, like, not a... Like, we've now, like...
Well, we're scared of them, too, actually.
Yeah, we've now weirdly, like, appropriated the Pukwudgie.
Yeah, totally.
So strange.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There were quotes. I really encourage you to go to the Fairies of New England, Andrew Warburton's site. There were quotes from people who were basically saying that. They're like, so, like, white paranormal researchers kind of came in and were like, oh yeah, let's look into this sort of thing, and like made the Pukwudgie this total different thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I wasn't expecting it at all. It was more interesting than I expected.
That is very, very strange.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, hey, I'm going to get into the Dover Deemer. Deemer. Better name.
Yeah.
The Dover Deemer.
The Dover Deemer.
I'll be talking about the Dover Demon in just a moment, but let's talk about a different kind of demon.
Oh, yeah.
The demons that can be found on patreon.com/GTTUpod, which are many of you, quite frankly.
Yes.
So this show is heavily supported by our Patreon and our amazing listener base. You know the deal with Patreon. We've got a number of tiers. You can find the one that best fits you, but here are some of the perks that you might get back. Starting at our lowest possible tier, our $1 tier, you can get access to our Discord, chat with other like-minded people who are into Guide to the Unknown and into the paranormal and stuff. And then you get into our $4 ghost tier, and here's where you start to get extra shows.
Ooh.
For one thing, you get an ad-free version of this very show on that feed that drops at the exact same moment. Fridays, the main feed goes out and it's got ads on it these days. But on Patreon, zero ads. We cut that shit out. People don't even hear what I'm saying right now.
Yeah.
In the Patreon version of the show.
Yep.
And you also get access to our exclusive podcast, The Netherworld Dispatch. One episode every month of The Netherworld Dispatch. But then if you become a Banshee, you get two every month.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, I started out talking about demons. The top tier right now, our demon tier, gets an exclusive show every single Monday. So you get Netherworld Dispatch Mondays, Guide to the Unknown Fridays, begin and end your week with us and spooky stuff.
Yeah.
So to give you a sample of the Netherworld Dispatch, the most recent episode on the feed right now is our review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. The as we record latest Ghostbusters movie, the fifth Ghostbusters movie, which for all accounts seems to have been received fairly negatively critically.
Yeah, but it did well. Box office wise,
I'm hearing competing things about that too. It apparently did decently.
I mean, it did well. It did better than the last one for the first weekend.
But it had a higher budget. People are quick to point out. I don't know, man. Here's what the deal is. We liked it.
Yeah, it was good. We actually put our, when we do movie reviews, we always start them off spoiler free, and then we move into the spoiler territory. We actually put the spoiler free part of our Patreon episode on the main feed for everybody to try out and sample. So you can go check that out if you like.
Without any fear.
Mm-hmm.
But then, well, you don't want to get spoiled of a new movie. You don't want to be too scared. Without any fear.
Nor trepidation.
But then you can get the entire show on The Netherworld Dispatch. That one's in our demon tier. It's just how it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I have? I have another review for us that I thought was very, very kind. If you wouldn't mind me reading this one here. It came to us from 12TVA, who called our show Creepy Comfort Food. saying, "I've been listening to Guide to the Unknown for years and hope to for many years to come. Kristen and Will have the best sibling dynamic, especially when they crack each other up. And there's something so chill and relaxing about the way they present each creepy topic. I'm still haunted by the chair in the woods where they grew up." Love this podcast so dang much. 5 stars.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. That's so nice.
Thank you.
I love that.
Thank you. And like I said, there are ads on this show now. So, hey, mm-hmm. I'll be back in just a second with the Dover Demon.
Yep.
After this commercial break. Okay. So, the Dover Demon.
Yep.
Or as people are calling it, the Dover Demer.
The Dover Demer.
I'm going to take you back in time, Chrissy, to April of 1977, almost exactly 47 years ago today.
Oh my God.
17-year-old Bill Bartlett and his friends are driving down Farm Street in Dover, Massachusetts. Now, I actually went onto like Google Maps and dropped, you know, you can do like street view.
Fine.
I just wanted to see what it looked like because I'm thinking Massachusetts is an old place.
Right.
And the road looked very familiar to me. Not that I've been there, just like that, you know,
the feel.
East Coast vibe. Mm-hmm. So he's out at 10 p.m. driving along these winding roads lined with tall trees and like stone walls. We grew up in Connecticut.
Yeah.
It very much looks like some of the roads in Connecticut. Those winding, dark roads. You wouldn't even know necessarily out there at night. It would be hard to imagine that you're really just like an hour from Boston.
Yes.
It feels remote.
It's very weird.
It feels alone. So just after 10 p.m., Bartlett and his friends see something, a creature. Sitting on the top of a broken stone wall, they spot the entity that would become known as the Dover Demon.
Demer. Okay, I'll stop.
The Dover Demon. Later, he would draw a sketch of what he had seen. And to be honest, it looks more or less like an alien.
Okay.
You know, if you picture like a gray alien. Uh-huh. Imagine a gray alien who's also like a dog. No okay. tail, right?
Okay,
like walking all right. on all fours instead of walking upright.
Okay.
But I will say the differentiating factor from a typical gray alien is like, you know how people say a gray alien's head is like almond shaped? Mm-hmm. It's got like that pointy chin. The head of this thing that was drawn by Bill Bartlett looks more like exactly like a peanut.
Oh.
A peanut in the shell. It looks like the head of this creature is Mr. Peanut.
Oh, okay.
Like an infinity symbol.
Yeah, yeah.
Standing at number 8.
Yeah.
Right? it's got 4 long limbs, and it's crouching on this stone wall even as he drew it. Mm-hmm. And its fingers are really long, almost like salad fingers, the cartoon
what the hell is
salad
this thing?
Fingers.
Yeah.
I know. It looks slim. It looks slimy and hairless, no tail.
I've never heard of such a thing. This is unique.
It's very, very weird. So on the sketch that Bill Bartlett provided, we get the most crucial proof that what he claimed to see on the wall was real. Because in the corner, he wrote the following. "I, Bill Bartlett, swear on a stack of Bibles that I saw this creature."
How old was he?
17.
Huh, okay.
Stack of Bibles.
Yeah.
I mean, what else can you do?
Yeah, it seems like something a younger kid would write.
Obviously, no one's going to believe you that you saw, you know, a monster,
right.
essentially. But it did lead me to wonder, and I didn't research this, I truly just wonder, at what point was it not enough to swear on one Bible?
Yeah, right. Where was the tipping point?
A whole stack.
I swear on a stack of Bibles. Maybe it just sounds good.
Bibles grow in power the more Bibles that you have. Like your promise is even more important.
And if that's true, why are we swearing on only one Bible
true.
In court?
Yes, they should have a whole stack of Bibles that you have to like climb to the top of.
Right.
Instead of sitting in that like little pulpit, you should be sitting on a pile of Bibles when you give a testimony.
Or in like a chair of Bibles.
Is there any punishment for lying on a Bible? Right? Aside, I guess, well, just sin or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. It's not as interesting to me. I need you to get like struck by lightning or something like that. So Bill Bartlett would later explain how certain he was that he saw something unusual, calling out again that it did not have a tail. It was not a dog or a cat or a fox or something. In fact, he said it was more human-like in its form, although it was walking around on all fours and crouched on this stone wall. And the shape of it reminded him of, quote, kids with distended bellies.
Oh, my God.
Like, it had that sort of, like, big round middle.
Yeah.
You know?
And it was slimy?
I'm saying slimy. He drew a picture of it. There was not slime dripping off of it in the picture or anything, mm-hmm. but like, you know, if something doesn't have hair,
yeah,
I assume it's sweating and stuff, you know, or like just like,
yeah, there's nowhere to catch the sweat.
There's nowhere to catch the sweat. Although, yeah. like, I guess hairless cats don't sweat.
Oh, yeah.
Do they ever feel clammy or they just always feel dry?
Soft.
And ugh, ugh. Anyway, so it turns out that Bill Bartlett is not the only person who saw this thing.
Oh.
So this comes from the Yankee Express, what I've got for you. A mere 2 hours later, so around midnight, 15-year-old John Baxter encountered the creature on Miller High Road. As Baxter proceeded down the street, he saw a small figure approaching him. The figure was at first unidentifiable in the dark. Still, as it neared, Baxter knew it was not an ordinary animal or human. Instead, something in between.
What is this?
That's a great question. So the figure scurried off to the left, descending a wooden gully, and stopped on the other side. Baxter followed it, I guess, pausing at the top of the gully, where he got his first good look at the being. It sat near a tree with its feet, quote-unquote, molded around the top of a rock. Now, here it's worth pointing out that even in Bill Bartlett's drawing of this thing,
uh-huh.
it's drawn on all fours, like perched at the top of a stone wall.
Yeah.
But the way that he drew its like fingers, mm-hmm. it's almost like those sticky hands that you would get from
Like a coin machine.
Yeah, like a coin machine at the grocery store.
Yeah.
You know, like you put a quarter in, then you get that little ball, and sometimes you get that slap sticky hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's like its fingers like were gooing into different crevices of the rocks. Almost like it didn't have bones.
Yeah.
You know? Like it was made out of rubber.
So the feet were doing the same, it seems?
Yeah, I guess all of its limbs were. So again, it says it sat near a tree with its feet molded around the top of a rock. This is very hard to imagine.
What?
I know. Its head was a figure eight shape with two dark eyes and a body that resembled a monkey. Which also, I mean, if you like a distended belly of like a human
child.
Yeah,
but to say like.
Or a monkey, like we basically are the same thing.
Totally.
You know? I tried to like sneak out for the weekend, so I put a huge ape in the house.
Uh-huh.
Because we're such close, you know, genetic cousins.
Oh, yeah.
Allie totally figured it out.
Well, she's very smart.
She knew that I'd gone out to go golfing. Whatever. Whatever I'm supposed to be doing.
What a party animal.
Now, struck with fear, Baxter left the scene, moving swiftly down the road, and he was visibly shaken. Whatever. That's it. The next night, though, there's another sighting. What?
This is insane.
Yeah. This reminds me of...
I can't believe there are multiple sightings of this thing.
All in like a couple of days, though, too.
And they're all saying it looks the same?
They're all saying it looks the same.
What is this?
So there was a thing. There was a thing out there that night.
What? I'll let it unfold. Is there a theory about what this is?
Of course there are theories.
You don't have to tell me what it is yet, but...
Each is more useless than the last, the theories.
There's nothing that's...
No, there was
helpful?
Like a sick badger,
oh,
a
God.
Sick nude badger walking around or something.
That's not helpful.
Boneless fingered badger.
It's not that.
I know.
It can't be.
Well, people have other theories. I'm saying, like, what if there? It was around for two nights and no one ever really saw it again. This was like some sort of like a sick wounded animal or something.
Why is it head shaped like a peanut?
I don't know. Maybe it was a peanut that grew a body. Was walking around.
Maybe.
Yeah. Now that no one ever thought of that before.
No.
In fact, I almost feel I should cut that.
This is wild.
So the very next night on April 22nd, a 15-year-old girl named Abby Brabham. saw.
I've learned my lesson. I'm declining from commenting on names.
Any names.
Yeah.
Saw the creature standing upright next to a tree. Her time of witness was also around midnight. All three witnesses gave similar descriptions of what they saw and drew sketches of the creature. The monster was dubbed the Dover Demon.
Mm-hmm.
Is this demonic behavior?
No. It's just like sitting, like leaning against trees and stuff.
Sitting against a wall, running away from teenagers and hiding.
No, there's nothing demonic.
Standing near a tree.
Yeah.
People love to throw the word demon around.
Totally.
That's really all it is. And
it's a nature enjoying creature.
And it's, you know, Dover Demon has an especially, you know, interesting ring to it.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's get into some of the theories of what it may have been. And welcome back to the show, Skeptic Joe Nickel.
Oh, yes. Joe Nickel.
This guy, This is my kind of guy.
I don't know, though. Is he?
No, I like to listen to what he has to say, but he sounds like a...
No, he's a pain in the ass.
He's aggressive.
Yeah.
I'm skeptical of just about everything, but he's very aggressive.
No, he's a... Yeah. You can be questioning without being such a killjoy.
Yeah. Again, I feel like this very show, part of what we do professionally is... We don't kill the joy. In fact, I think the point of the show is to revel in the joy.
Totally.
But also, bit by bit, I feel like we have a tendency to prove things or you know, posit that things are less mysterious than what the world has perhaps said.
True. But seeing videos of Joe Nickel and stuff, and even just quotes, there's a pomposity that I don't like.
Very, very aggressive. So he's the guy that we had watched some Unsolved Mysteries about. Spontaneous human combustion. And he's like, what these mystery mongers, these fools, you know, don't understand.
He's calling people dumbasses and losers, basically, but aggressive. In a more annoying way.
So don't be Joe Nickel. I learned the hard way recently. Don't be smug.
Oh, well.
Even if you think it's kind of funny, people don't always get that joke. Anyway, okay. So skeptic Joe Nickel believes the creature was likely a snowy owl.
Okay.
Sounds the opposite of a nude...
A nude monkey.
Hairless thing. Yeah, a nude monkey.
With a distended belly that's feet, like, grip a rock.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, skeptic Joe Nickel. Hey, I saw a nude monkey. It's probably an owl, you fool. Leave me alone. He says that it would have reflected in the yellow headlights of older cars as the peachy color described by Bartlett, meaning if it looked like it had a skin tone,
right?
It's not because it was hairless and featherless. It's because it was reflecting light. That sounds...
What? That
sounds more of a stretch to me than just seeing, like, again, what I posit, which is like, you're in Massachusetts. I presume there are also farmlands around.
Right. Mm-hmm.
A sick hairless animal.
No, I agree that white feathers red as
peachy
nude
skin and feathers red as long spindly fingers. Oh, man. Come on, Nickel.
Can it, Nickel?
Keep it together, Nickel. In addition, the, quote, long spindly arms and fingers of the supposed creature could be the partially opened wings and the splayed feathers at the wing tips of a snowy owl. Again, no.
No.
Disagree. Police told the Associated Press that creatures reported by the teenagers, quote, were probably nothing more than a school vacation hoax.
Now,
that to me could easily be.
Yeah, totally.
You've got three kids that are all in their teens.
Yeah.
Who see this thing bing, bang, boom, one after another. That could easily be kids just making something
sure
up.
Yeah.
Some other guy, Ben Radford, had suggested the sighting may have been influenced by the pop culture of the time, as 1977 was a year for big-headed type creatures. So I guess there was...
Okay.
You know, I don't know when E.T. came out or whatever, but maybe it was just like in the...
Yeah, or like... The Flatwoods Monster, I wonder when that was kind of out and about. And that was Virginia, which isn't so far away from Massachusetts.
Sure.
And that's a big-headed creature.
Yep, absolutely. We'll just make up
honestly, almost like, I could see how that could almost be a little bit of like a figure eight sort of shape. Because it has like kind of a spade-like head. Yeah. And then I think they say that there's almost like another spade behind it.
Yeah, that was confusing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so interesting.
And just confusing shapes in the night. Yeah. You know, just because you see something confusing, in my estimation, just because you see
confusion
something confusing
in
the dark doesn't mean it's a monster.
Right.
Now, here's another theory that people have bandied about. Mm-hmm. Was it a moose?
Okay.
Now, I've never
that
seen
it. That doesn't seem.
Yeah, I don't know.
Likely, right?
I wouldn't think so. So a yearling moose by that time of April would weigh more than 600 pounds and be bigger than the Volkswagen that Bill Bartlett was driving.
Yeah.
So not a moose.
No.
But this guy, his name is Lauren Coleman. He's a cryptozoologist who was researching this story.
Mm-hmm.
I liked this. He goes on to be like, again, here's other reasons why it's not a moose. To have a bipedal moose with long fingers and orange skin and no hair and no nose, I forgot about no nose, would be more of a phenomenon than the Dover Demon.
Yeah.
Like if you saw a crazy moose, that's weirder than seeing like this.
That would freak me out.
So this this article from whatever Yankee Express.
Yankee Doodle Express.
Yeah. They go, so what did the teens see? And I loved this wrap up of the notion from Lauren Coleman, cryptozoologist. It's okay to say we don't know.
Yeah, totally.
Now, all of what we've been saying is not to say that there's definitely a monster in the woods or on the opposite side that these kids definitely made it up.
Right.
Right. Like, it could easily be, you could be influenced by the times and people are seeing things in the 70s or whatever, and then think you see something and now you're off and running. You can believe that you saw a monster even if you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I also like that even though this guy is a cryptozoologist, Lauren Coleman, it's okay to say we don't know.
Yeah.
Why do we have to provide it? We are compelled to provide an answer one way or the other. Oh, it was definitely the Dover demon, a monster. Mm-hmm. Or if you're a skeptic and you're fully the other way, it was a snowy owl, says Joe Nickel, overcompensating.
It's not always an owl. I know that that's a really, like,
right.
It's an explanation for Mothman and for other cryptids as well, but this one really does not fit an owl.
I totally agree. But more my point of saying, like,
yeah,
here's what it had to be. Mm-hmm. It's just like, well, you weren't there, Joe Nickel.
Right.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, you can speculate, as I do, that this was not a monster.
Yeah.
But it doesn't then mean that you can provide the answer.
No.
It was a snowy owl, and it's feathers were reflecting light, so it looked like nude peachy skin. Like, no, somehow for being the quote-unquote rational one who believes in science and not speculation, you're speculating in a way that makes you sound as absurd.
That's a great point. Yeah, absolutely.
I would even say that for the science community, there would be more dignity in saying what this cryptozoologist said.
Yes.
It's okay to say we don't know.
Yes, I absolutely agree.
Which again is why I'm like, if I would assume that what Joe Nickel's really trying to do, and it's hard to get through his aggressive, you know, view on the matter. It's like, he's trying to say what's more likely than this being a monster.
Yeah.
It's more likely that it's an animal that exists.
Right.
Like an owl.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think is actually the more like helpful way to phrase things is by saying exactly that. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But the likelihood that it was a new animal we've never heard of before stretches the bounds of, you know, credulity.
Yeah, totally.
It's more likely to have been an owl than it is to be a monster.
Sure.
But again, I don't know why nobody seems to have brought this up. Why can't it be some weird, you know, animal suffering from some sort of like a mange?
Yeah.
That like made its hair fall out and is sick. And, you know, it was seen over the course of two nights. Maybe it died because it was a sick animal.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
That seems more likely to me than it being a literal monster.
Yes.
Or somehow being an owl who reflected light to look peach colored.
Right.
I'm sorry. Neither explanation from either camp makes sense to me. The believers or the skeptics.
No, absolutely. And I also think that it's not the worst thing to say. As you said, I don't know.
I don't know.
And also, maybe we will someday. Like, maybe we don't know right now. Perhaps we'll get more information someday and maybe we will know. Like, it's not, it's, this is not the kind of thing that's necessarily important enough that we're gonna like really keep searching.
Yeah, it doesn't
or whatever.
Matter.
But there are lots of things that we unfortunately don't know.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know who killed JFK.
Yep.
Perhaps we will get information someday that helps us know, but right now we don't know.
We don't know.
Not the same exact thing, but sometimes
I disagree. They're equally important to me.
Sometimes you just do not have the information to know. And that has to just be the end of it until something changes and you do have the information
to know. Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally agree with you. Another way of just saying, like, everyone chill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Some kids saw a peanut-headed thing 50 years ago, and then people formed camps
insane.
To debate
what would
it.
Have this peanut head, though?
I don't know.
What animal has a peanut head like
that? Well, that's
why
I'm nothing has a peanut-shaped head.
No.
I've never seen this before in all my days.
Nor
which
have
is
I.
Why the closest that you get is, like, Carol Strachan.
Who?
The guy that played Lurch in the Addams Family.
Or
the giant from Twin Peaks. Maybe it was a hairless platypus.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
That, again, is why I'm saying it was maybe a sick creature. Again, I don't want to get too grisly or sad.
No,
but
I know,
like,
but that...
Did it have some sort of, like, a condition or a head injury or...
Oh, God. Oh, God. Maybe.
Right? I'm just saying.
God damn it.
The animal kingdom is a cruel, cruel place.
I know. It's messed up.
It's a scary world.
Yeah.
All right, so...
It's like how people, you know, they were talking about, like, the Chupacabra or, like, whatever... Oh, no, the Montauk Monster.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's
right.
It's just like a messed up dog with mange.
Yeah, it's like a bloated, drowned animal that washed up on the beach. And then even somehow that we were advanced enough to be taking photos of it and putting it on the internet, people still were like, it's a monster in Montauk.
It's a dog.
Yeah, it's like a corpse.
Yeah.
This was almost a corpse, I think. I think the Dover Demon.
It was making its way to Corpsedom.
Yeah, he was heading to the Rainbow Bridge, as they say.
God.
And I got up to heaven, and God went,
what's that?
What are you? A demon! Send it to hell! So here's some of the reputation that I've got. A little bit of wrap-up here. Uh-huh. And I liked this, too. So this, I think, was also the Yankee Express or whatever. It sounds like a train you take. I'm on the Yankee Express. It sounds like a train you take 300 years ago.
Yes, it does.
All right, so this reporter, the article here has this. So they were interviewing people. Behind the counter at this restaurant, Scott Bielski, 17, of Dover, a senior at Dover Sherborne High, said the demon gave his small town a unique claim to fame, saying, "Home of the Dover Demon has a nice ring to it," he said with a smile. As far as he knows, the creature had never stopped into the soda fountain. "Let us know if he wants anything," he said. This is
fun.
It's fun, yeah. A customer who gave his name as Jimmy said he's lived in town for 4 years but has yet to see the demon. "Maybe I will someday," he said. "I'm one of those realists. If I don't see it, I don't believe it." Customer Ed Tortolotti, Toilette. Probably says Toilette.
Are you testing me?
Customer Ed Toilette.
Are you testing me to not say anything about this name? Tortoloni Toilette? Is this man's name? Damn it.
Yes, this man's name is Tortoloni Toilette. That's a strange name for this fella. Anyway, he had this to say. "I think it's probably as real as the Easter Bunny, but it's fun." Little does he know the Easter Bunny is one of the things I definitely believe in.
Yeah.
He says that. I go, yeah, I agree. It's real. Nearly three decades after seeing something very strange on Farm Street, Bill Bartlett has decidedly mixed feelings about the experience. "It was my 15 minutes of fame without wanting it," he said. "It was a little embarrassing. It still is." Hmm. Now, I looked into Bill Bartlett.
Mm-hmm.
1977 is not that long ago.
No.
He's an artist.
Oh, cool.
You can literally find his art online. He does a lot of like still life work. And for being the kind of person that, and we've speculated on this many times in the past, but like being the kind of person who's like come forward and said, "I had a paranormal experience. My house is haunted.
Yeah.
I saw a monster." We always think of that as like, well, that's some way for you to get attention and drum up.
Yeah, it definitely could be.
Like business opportunities and stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
People who have a haunted house and then turn it into an Airbnb, and that's the whole marketing thing.
Right.
It's like, theoretically, you can make money off of having an experience like this.
Mm-hmm.
So not one piece of art of his I saw was a depiction of the Dover Demon.
What about a peanut?
Oh, my God. It was
still life with Mr. Peanut?
Holy shit. Now that you bring it up, it was all peanuts. He only paints peanuts. No, it was like very, like, he doesn't seem to be trying to cash in on this, which blends more credence to it than anything.
I know, it always does for me, yeah.
He said he hasn't talked much to his two children, who are 8 and 5 at the time of this article, about the creature, saying, quote, "I don't want to scare them." And the professional artist has never drawn another picture of the thing he saw. Quote, "I don't have enough memory of it," he said. "I haven't wanted to. I'm a serious fine arts painter. I don't want people to think I'm some freak. I don't usually tell anybody. I shouldn't be embarrassed, but you see these people on TV, and they're made to look like idiots," he said. "I really do wish that I had made it up. I might have profited from it. It's a great story. I wish it was seen again, so everyone would know it was true."
Hmm.
So he doesn't seem to want much of anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Which, again, is a big check for me in the box of, he saw something.
Yeah, credibility.
Now, whether or not that thing was a monster or some other thing that can be easily explained is a different matter.
Totally.
But I firmly believe that in April 1977 at 10 p.m., driving on these long, winding, dark roads, he saw a pale creature staring at him from the top of a stone wall.
Man. And no matter what it is, that's freaky.
But no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Although I do find it... It's interesting to me how many people seem to have an experience like this and then go tell the police.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're the police. What are you supposed to do?
I know. What are they going to do about it?
What are they going to do?
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually,
I don't know. What would you do?
That's what the Ghostbusters are supposed to be there for.
That's
right?
True.
There's
something
strange.
Who do you go to?
Yeah, who do you go to? You just go tell them about it.
Right.
And then they take it or leave it. But the cops would just be like, I don't know. Did it
hurt
did
you?
Did it rob a bank?
Yeah, right.
Because if not,
we're out.
I'm pretty much done with this conversation.
Right. I guess you call your local paranormal group.
Evidently, you call us.
Yeah.
That's what you do. I want to hear about it.
Absolutely.
Let me know. All right, everybody. Well, there you go. A couple of cryptids from Massachusetts.
Yes. So there you have it. Thank you so much. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for spending some time with us. Like Bill said before, if you would like more and if you would like to help support us, which we appreciate so much, you can go to patreon.com/gttupod. You can also find us on social media. I am at Chillin' Kristen.
I am at The Myth Traveler.
And we will be back next week for more spooky stuff.
So until next time we meet, everybody, I was going to say good talk, gang.
Whoa. That's what we said on our old podcast.
That is so weird.
That's really weird.
What did we say? We must travel.
Yeah.
That is so strange.
It's because we have a new set. We're in a new setup right now where our set is in flux.
Yeah. If you happen to be watching the video version, pardon our appearance while we renovate. I've been rebuilding in the basement.
Yeah.
And then I had a massive technical issue. I suspect there might have been a puck wedgie.
Or a gremlin.
I have reason to suspect either a puck wedgie or a gremlin got into my computer and pulled out some wires and stuff. So we had to improvise a few things this week.
Seems that way.
But yeah, until next we meet, we must travel.
Back to the netherworld, go we.
That was weird.
I'm not kidding. Yeah. I'm not saying this just because you said, you almost said good talking. I listened to a Patreon only true crime podcast from a former FBI agent. And she ends by saying, until next time, be safe out there. And I thought to myself, be safe out there.
Oh, weird.
I know. It's not even our thing.
No, no.
But so you were almost, our sign offs.
You almost stole.
Yeah, I know.
You almost plagiarized.
I know.
I could have turned you in.
You wouldn't dare.
I would have turned you
in. No. I'm talking about Jodine Weber. I think she's amazing.
And I'm talking about curious. You.
Brilliant.
Behind bars.
No!